Super Nintendo, PC Gaming, even Apple Gaming, Bart's Nightmare, Lufia, Metal Warriors, Dark Forces, Jedi Knight, Marathon, Alone in the Dark, all on the Infinite Lives Podcast.
Hi everybody, welcome back to the Infinite Lives Podcast. This is John giving you the intro today. I am joined by my good compatriot partner here, Dan. Dan, say hello.
Hey.
And we have a special guest today, our good friend Kevin. Kevin, say hello to the viewers.
Hey, everyone.
Yeah, they're viewing us, not listening.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah, that makes sense.
Of course it does. For a podcast.
Indeed. So, where we left off last time was we were just in the initial phases of talking about the Super Nintendo, and I believe we left off at the Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, and our fond memories of that game. But before we get to that and get back into our Super Nintendo talk, Kevin, why don't you give us a little bit of your first gaming memories and your first video game system that you got?
So for me, just like with you, John, it's a memory from when I was a little kid. Back in the early 80s, my parents had an Intellivision, which pretty much was my only game system for a long time. And my first memory was a game Snafu. Just amazing fun game. It's essentially the old snake game, you know, where you don't want to bite the end of your tail.
Yep.
Or another mode, pretty much think of the laser bikes, or what are they called, from Tron?
Yeah, no, the light bikes, I got
the you. Light bikes. Yeah, it's four-player game, two players being computers, of course.
Okay.
And essentially, either you're trying to trap everyone with the light bikes, or you're snakes and you don't want to have anyone bite your tail.
Alright. Sounds interesting. So that was your first gaming system that you got, but you said that was your parents'. What was the first gaming system you got that was yours?
First one that's mine was NES. Oh, it was right before Super Mario 3 came out in the U.S.
So. Oh, wow, that's a long time then. So you rocked that
into... Just like me.
I was late to the party.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, as I was telling Dan in our first episode, my first gaming memory is actually an arcade game, which was Centipede. So it's interesting that you and Dan both didn't get your own personal gaming system until, like, you were, what, 9, 10, I'm guessing?
Is that you didn't own the Centipede.
No. But, I mean, I got my Nintendo when I was 5, so... or 6, I should say, because it came out in 85. That was my birthday present for that year.
Yeah, let's see. Mario 3, what was that, 91?
U.S., it was, I want to say, 1990.
Yeah.
So I got it... Yeah, it'd be 89 I got it. It's a little under a year before Mario 3.
Oh, cool. Okay. And so you've been... You've I know you personally have had a lot of video game systems...
Yeah, I think being a late starter kind of broke my brain. I had to go out and buy pretty much everything.
So in this period, in the early 90s, what systems were you rocking right now?
So, I Super Nintendo all the way.
Mm-hmm.
My brother got it pretty much a week before it came out.
Oh, wow, you were even earlier than Dan or I, so...
What happened was... About a week and a half before it came out, Toys R Us put it on sale around me.
Mm.
So, a couple of my friends came over, brought over a Super Nintendo, and just blew our minds. You know, here's this box from the future.
Yeah, I think we all had that same experience when we saw Super Mario World the first time, so...
Yeah, it's a cool box, too.
Yeah, yeah. It, at the time, it was a cool-looking box, the black...
I put the poster with all of, like, the future games that were going to come out. I put that on my wall.
Yep. It just kind of like what I did with my Nintendo Power posters that used to come in the magazine. Oh, yeah, you remember those. It'd be, like, a random game poster that had nothing to do with the game so much. It was a somewhat weird piece of art.
See, I can never hang those up because I can never get them out of the magazine without tearing them on the staples.
Yep. Well, later on, they started doing the perforations on the posters. So, all right. So we're in the early 90s at this point. All three of us have a Super Nintendo.
So you only have a Super Nintendo? Do you have a PC that's like playing games at this point?
So had a PC. Let's see. Around then, what would it be? 386.
Well, we're thinking like 90, this is, we're about like 90, 93 to 95 right now.
Yeah, like I think that's around 386 times. Yeah. Still had the turbo button on it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And had a Genesis, Oh, probably about 93.
Oh, so you actually did own a Genesis. Dan and I never actually owned a Genesis, so...
See, I saw a game, Phantasy Star 2, shortly after it came out. This is before I had my original NES. So
oh, wow. Okay.
That game haunted me. It changed my world. It changed what role-playing games were.
Oh, yeah. So that was your experience with, like, the role-playing game, changing the way you saw games. Dan and I had a similar experience with the Final Fantasy games on the Super Nintendo, so...
See, what's funny is Final Fantasy ended up being obsessed over it. Saw the first one at Power Fest 89.
Mm-hmm.
Hated it. Played it for 5 minutes. Hated it. The worst way to introduce a little kid to role-playing games... Give them a 5 minute timer, and then the system resets.
That doesn't seem like the right way to play an RPG at all.
Hated it. Then became obsessed.
Well, that's good. Yeah, no, appreciate it later. Like we were discussing before, I don't think I was in the right mindset when those early RPGs came out, like the first Final Fantasy or the Phantasy Stars, that I could appreciate those. It wasn't until I started getting into my teens that I started to want to play those games. And started appreciating, like, the storytelling and, you know, the grinding aspect, as it were, at that point. You know, the sit there for 10 hours walking around in circles trying to kill stuff so you can level your guys up.
Although I do have to say, just like with what you mentioned on a previous podcast, Dragon Warrior, the Nintendo Power Special, I was in on that.
Yeah, oh yeah. That was one of the only RPGs I remember actually finishing. But it was mostly due to the fact that I had the strategy guide, the spell list, and I knew where to go throughout the game. So it wasn't a matter of, actually having to figure out all that stuff, because I don't think I could have at that point.
Yeah, on its own.
They just kind of threw you in there, and you were just on your own.
Yeah, don't go across bridge, or you're dead.
Yeah. So anyways, we're getting a little off topic here. We'll get back to the early 90s and the Super Nintendo.
So right now, it looks like we have... Kevin, you have PC, Super Nintendo, Genesis. John, you have Super Nintendo.
Yeah, I have the Super Nintendo.
Do you have a PC at this point?
I didn't get my PC until 94. We had just moved right before I started high school, and so my mom had started to learn how to do computer work because she started out in accounting, but then she had to start doing like tech support for her office. So she had to get up to speed on a computer. So she finally broke down and bought a 386 with the turbo button. I want to say the brand was like an AST, if I remember correctly. If anybody remembers that brand.
I don't even know what that is.
No? Okay. So
sounds
it was
like
just,
a power supply.
It was just some random brand of PC that you could buy at the time. And, oh gosh, was it CompUSA that we bought it from? I want to say it was one of those.
I don't
even know what that is. Yeah, it was one of those old... it was one of the older chains that, like... went out of business.
Yeah, I know what CompUSA.
So, okay, good. and so, when we finally got that 486, that and that through high school, we had that computer. So, the 386, which then got upgraded with, I want to say, like 6 or 8 megs of RAM, which was almost
wow,
like, it was like it was like $800 to upgrade that because
yeah,
Windows 95 came. Yeah, Windows 95 came out, and we were like, my mom was like,
oh,
okay,
you guys had Windows 95.
Oh yeah, we started out in 3.1, but then
ballin'.
Yeah, oh yeah, 95 came out, and we were shot calling. Well, we also had relatives who worked at Microsoft, so we could actually get the software cheaper. So we did upgrade to 95, and so the 386 was just a 386 to start out with. The smaller hard, the floppy drive, what was the 3.5 inch, is that what those are called?
Oh,
the newer floppies.
It, yeah.
That could hold, I want to say it was like less than 1.5 megabytes on each of those.
Like 1.44.
Yep,
yeah, 1.44. I never understood why they called them floppy drives. They were not floppy anymore.
Hey, just nomenclature, right? Why do we call it taping something on the TVs in certain aspects now? You know, some people still say, I gotta tape my favorite program, even though you're digitally recording it.
Oh.
Yeah, it's just the way the
whoa.
Yeah, the need to move forward is strong sometimes, and sometimes it's you get entrenched in the way you say things, so. But yeah, we had that AST that we upgraded with the RAM first to get Windows 95, but then we got one of the early CD-ROM drives, the original, like... 2X CD-ROM drive that was part of this Sound Blaster bundle. So it was a CD.
I got one of those.
Yeah, it was a CD-ROM with the Sound Blaster card and a couple of speakers. And it must have taken my mom about a week and a half to get that thing up and running, because you had to manually set all your little jumpers, and you had to make sure there were no, like, IRQ conflicts, and, oh yeah, this is, I had no idea what this stuff was at the time. I was just wanting to play the copy of Doom 2 that my mom got me for Christmas, along with that CD-ROM drive, and that CD-ROM was 20 megabytes. So it was. I was waiting for that for a week and a half. I'm like, I want to play Doom 2 so bad, so bad. And just couldn't play it because the CD-ROM wouldn't work. Oh, it was just... And then I finally got to install it and play it. And I'm not. I wasn't very good at FPSs. So yeah. I got through a good portion of that game. But this is in the early days of the internet. So you didn't have, like, easy access to facts or cheat codes or things like that. So... I don't even remember where I learned about the God mode code and the no clipping code from, but I used those to get through and beat that game, I remember.
See, for me, I kind of lucked out. I had one of those friends who knew everything. We don't know how he knew it. His memory was perfect, so give me a cheat code, you go to school, and it's like, hey, Frank, how do I do debug menu on Sonic 2? All of a sudden, he's whipping out, like, so you go sound test, and you put in this guy's birth date, which happens to be this, and all of a sudden you have debug, and it's like, how do you even know this?
There was a debug mode in Sonic?
Yeah.
Oh,
wow.
It was so hidden. You had get in sound test, which was a code on its own, then put the sound test in the correct order to be people's birthdays.
That, you blew my mind.
So at this point, I had only a Super Nintendo, and we had Apple Performa. We had a Macintosh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey,
so
don't ask me
with,
about Macs. I had
that
nothing.
That came with a CD-ROM drive.
Was that one of the monochrome deals?
No. This is full color. It was a Performa. It was PowerPC.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's a more name I'm more familiar
with. It had a CD-ROM drive in it. It was one of those deals where it was like the monitor and the computer all kind of mashed into one big thing. And yeah, even the monitor was huge. It was like, I think, almost 17 inches or something.
Oh,
like that.
Wow. I only
I
only had a 14 for
yeah, we paid a lot of money for that. Although second day it caught on fire. yeah, I turned it on and it started smoking out of the top of it.
Oh, goodness.
And the bulb or whatever for the monitor actually burnt out and just started smoking, so we had to get that replaced. But
so you had one glorious night of computing, and the next day you're just like, well, I guess this has gone for a little while.
So unfortunately, I didn't get to play Doom when it first came out at home, but I had a friend who had a 486, and we played Doom when that first came out, and because his older brother had it, and that was pretty good.
Yeah, no.
Doom was really good. We had multiple sleepovers where we just played Doom, and, you know, we'd turn out the lights, there'd be like three or four of us, you know, playing around a computer. We were trying to scare each other. That was a really scary game. I remember spending, like, you know, I don't know how many hours trying to get, like, the chainsaw and stuff like that. And
it's probably why our eyesight's so terrible, all of us, is that we were huddled around a 14-inch monitor watching PC games for God knows how long.
Hey, that's an urban myth. That doesn't mess up your eyes. It's all genetics.
Yeah, oh yeah, my eyes are terrible,
genetics.
So...
It's all genetics.
No,
but,
ours was a 486, I remember as well. Yeah. It wasn't a 386.
But. See, we went to 486 later, but... We hung on that 386 for a long time, which meant Doom kind of worked. Doom 2, oh, is a train wreck. It was a PowerPoint presentation.
And it was like a 46, like, /33, and they had, like,
I
remember it was, like, -33,
megahertz.
And yeah, they added megahertz at that point.
Auto exec. I don't know what. See, we had a Macintosh. I didn't have to do...
That's
we,
right.
We didn't have to do any of this. We had a desktop and a mouse.
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy.
So yeah, I mean, we were playing. I was still playing my Super Nintendo and going through some of the really good games at that time. I know Dan and I touched on this last episode. Kevin, we would rent a lot of video games from Blockbuster at that time. So it was easy to test out a game and be like, okay, this is something I want my mom to get me for my birthday or Christmas. Did you do that?
So to start off, I couldn't do it. My parents, frugal.
Okay.
So frugal. We didn't have cable. We didn't do movie rentals. We didn't do game rentals. If it weren't for Dragon Quest being included or Dragon Warrior, I could never talk them into letting me get a magazine subscription. All changed, though. My mom, she was a stay-at-home mom. She got bored of it. You know, by the time I was, you know, in junior high, she wanted something to do because I was the little kid.
Yeah, and so there, she wasn't taking care of you, as it were, when you got home anymore.
Yeah, so she picked up a job for Flynn's Video Jungle.
Oh.
With their logo as a big lion. And they were one of those video game or movie rental places that you knew they're going out of business.
Okay.
Like, from the day they opened. Like, you could just see them sinking.
Did they have a hidden porn section in the back?
Behind the curtain.
All right.
must be 18 to enter.
Man, I miss old video stores.
Do you really miss them?
I do. I liked browsing them, and I liked the really skeezy stuff, and I liked having a guy, like, you know, not like Blockbuster, I liked having a guy at the video store that would be like, hey, I know what kind of movies you like, because you rent here all the time, and he would suggest stuff.
That's why you loved Video Vertigo so much
in
Seattle.
Yeah, Video Vertigo in Seattle was great, because that guy knew exactly what I wanted.
That's where we found the story of Ricky. That was a hidden gem that we found.
Anyway, back to
Flynn's Video Jungle.
So my mom was working.
Oh, that's why there's a lion. Because of the jungle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Shut up.
So nice. My mom was working on collections for them. You know, all people wouldn't turn in their movies on time. She'd find out who they are. She'd call them, hassle them, never get the money or anything. But
now, did you ever hear stories? Was it like what kind of videos were the guys renting the pornos not returning them? Or was it mostly like the families keeping the copy?
It was all the families.
It was the families,
yeah. Oh, we returned Bambi. Oh, we returned Aladdin.
The Lion King. Yeah, oh yeah.
So, my mom, she was told, you know, as you do this job, we'll pay you based on your hours, how much you collect, and we'll let you rent 3 movies at a time. And as soon as I heard that, it's like, Mom, make it 2 games. Make it 2 games and a movie. That'd be awesome. So then I started getting free game rentals.
Nice.
And I rented all of the worst games you could ever play.
Oh, yeah. Well, last episode, Dan was regaling us with his
Bubsy.
3-week tale of trying to obtain Bubsy.
Hey, you said I didn't buy it.
No, you did rent it. And you played it for all, what, an hour? 2 hours?
A couple hours.
Yeah, and then you went back to playing. What did you go back to playing after that?
I think I went outside. I think I lost faith in some video games for a little bit.
So you were done with video games for a little while? Nice.
What were some of the bad video games you rented?
Yeah.
Oh, man. They're pretty much anything from, like, Sunsoft.
Sunsoft was a bad developer, mostly.
They had, like, all the bad Looney Tunes games. They just had the worst.
Did they make that bad Bart's Nightmare game or whatever?
Oh, I forgot.
That was a bad game.
That was one of them.
All of the Simpsons games were bad. Is there a good Simpsons game?
I enjoyed Virtual Bart just a little bit. Like there
was on Super Nintendo?
That was a Super Nintendo game that I was not... I remember it not being completely god-awful. Because Bart versus the Space Mutants, that was a terrible NES game.
Yeah.
But the Virtual Bart, each of the worlds was a little different, and they had like different types of controls. I want to say one of the levels you were like... a giant monster like Godzilla, and you were fighting. There was this other world where you were just like floating down, similar to the Battletoads level, where you're like dropping. And yeah, I remember it not being as bad as some of the other games that they came out with. Was it Bart's Nightmare? Was that the game?
Bart's Nightmare was pretty bad.
No, it
was just a dumb game.
Was it?
It's just a dumb game.
It was like six different levels that were so non-joined.
Yeah, that's the one I played. Yeah, that's not the one. That is the one I played. I thought it was Virtual Bart. It must have been. It was.
No, that game was bad. You had fond memories of a bad game.
I guess
okay.
I did. I guess
it's okay.
I did.
We all have this.
We all go there.
Like I said,
I wanted to buy Skulljagger so bad because it was an EGM. It was that pirate game.
Yeah, I know what Skulljagger is.
That game's bad.
Now,
that's not a good game.
A good pirate game was, if I remember correctly, the Hook game on the Super Nintendo. I actually liked.
Was that good?
You could fly. You had like little pixies. What was it? Tinkerbell. Thank you.
Is that even a good movie anymore? Like, is that, like, if we watched it right now?
I saw it about a year ago. I liked it.
Okay. Okay.
Although it could be nostalgia. If I didn't see it as a kid, I'd probably hate it.
Rufio.
Yeah, Rufio.
Rufio.
My fond memory of that, watching that movie, is I had to pee the whole movie, and I wanted to hold it in because I thought this was going to be like a life-changing movie kind of thing. It felt like it.
Oh, one thing though that I really enjoyed with the rentals. So, since my mom worked there, we didn't have to obey the time limit. It's like, if nobody is asking about this game, just keep it. You know, pretty much the Gamefly Netflix style.
Oh, nice.
So, one of them, Inindo. So, I went head-on. Inindo. I went head-on crazy for role-playing games. Inindo, it is type of game that there is no way it could be made nowadays. You're an Iga ninja, your clan has been destroyed by Nobunaga. So Nobunaga's the bad guy, kind of the opposite of that Nobunaga's revenge or
ambition.
I always pronounce it Nobunaga's ambition. I don't know why.
That's how
I
was
did.
As a kid.
Yeah, like I just didn't even bother to pronounce the name correctly.
Medieval Japan, Shogun era, yeah, okay.
And this was a crazy game because you'd have the regular battles is three people in your party, sort of strategy-ish.
Okay.
So kind of like the Lunar games, if you've ever played any of those.
Yeah.
Except you actually plan out your movements. It's not auto-move. And then you had big daimyo battles, where you'd have one territory battling another. You're a general, you're summoning, instead of like fireballs, your ninja magic could summon giant tigers the size of a castle made out of fire.
Sure, makes sense.
It's, completely I mean, random game. It's fun, though.
Canonical, you know, Japanese historically accurate. I mean,
giant flaming tigers.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and ninjas, they were everywhere.
Yeah. So, one of those 100% true to real life games.
Honestly, yeah. do you wish they'd remake something like that?
Actually, I'm good with the fact that I still pick that up and play it.
Oh, you still have that game?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, all those Japanese.
I've never even heard of that
medieval
game.
Medieval
so.
Games are really cool.
It's one of those that I'm surprised is at a rental place that had a very small selection.
Hey, the guy who worked there probably was like, man, I love this game. If one person rents this game,
they're my hero.
They're my best friend in the world.
I looked up Sunsoft. So one of the games that they brought out, they didn't actually make it, but they published it, was Flashback.
Oh,
apparently,
did they?
Apparently they were called U.S. Gold in the U.S.
That name does sound familiar.
Yeah. So Flashback, the reason why I bring up Flashback also was because there was like four games. They were all kind of similar, and I had all four of them, and I played them all to death. There was Out of This World, which is, you know, kind of a classic from the PC era, and then also played it on the Super Nintendo. Flashback, which was kind of like Out of This World, except it was more kind of a Blade Runner-ish kind of futuristic thing.
Didn't it have
thing.
Like some jungle environment?
You
or?
Started out in a jungle environment because you had amnesia, is the Flashback whole motif, and you're escaping aliens, but it had that same like rotoscope kind of animation, a lot of animation kind of stuff.
Is that the one with the laser gun?
Laser gun?
Didn't your character have a laser gun?
You had
gun
a pistol.
Did it shoot lasers or did it just shoot bullets?
I want to say it just shot bullets.
Okay.
It was cool. The animation for that was great. They had you had like this leather jacket that you pull your pistol out from, and you had a couple cool moves where you could actually like roll and tumble, and then when your guy would come out of the tumble, he'd have the gun drawn and you'd start shooting guys.
Okay.
I
didn't play these, but I know, like, I've always wanted to actually go back and play them.
Flashback
so.
Is really good. I mean, Out of This World is great because it's Out of This World and it's got the whole cinematic stuff and it's like a classic game. But Out of This World has a lot more to do with like world building kind of stuff like that. You know, you go into the city, you get jobs.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard. There was a whole like game show level that was really extremely difficult. And then well, the granddaddy of those kind of games, the side-scrolling, like, platforming, rotoscope animation thing was Prince of Persia, which I played on everything from IBM, Mac, and then I also played it on Super Nintendo, and I liked the Super Nintendo version the most because it had the most levels. Mm-hmm. It had 20 levels. Prince of Persia was it always had a time limit. The very first version had a 60-minute time limit, and the Super Nintendo one, because I believe it had twice as many levels, 20 levels, it had a 120-minute time limit. So if you started lagging behind, the last, like, five levels would get really hectic because you'd have, like, 20 minutes left in the timer and you were just kind of burning through.
Especially at the end of that game, I remember I've played some of it and I've watched other people play through the game. I remember that the later you get in the game, the much more menacing the enemies are.
Yeah.
Because, like, you'd come up to them, you'd have to pull out your sword, and they'd have more health, so it'd take you longer to kill them. And your sword only did a set amount of damage the entire game, so it would take you longer to get through those battles the further along you got in the game. So there would be guys you would be fighting, and if you weren't diligently finding, like, all the health potions for your guy to up your health,
mm-hmm.
those guys would have more health than you. And
the Super Nintendo version had really detailed graphics. The music was really good,
yeah,
because it was on the Super Nintendo. And what I always liked about these games was that you kind of had, there was a sense of, like, you could have, like, a style to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like in Flashback, like that rolling animation, pull out your gun and start shooting bad guys, there was no real point to it other than looking cool. Prince of Persia, you could lure guards into traps or try to brush them off a cliff, and that was really cool. The last one in those four that are remarkably all similar was Blackthorn, which was made by Blizzard.
If I remember,
didn't that one have a laser though?
No, that one had a shotgun.
Yeah, I just remember it's a big gun.
I think you get
awesome
upgrades to that shotgun, and it starts, like, shooting out like fire or something, just doing more damage. Blackthorn was cool because it was really, like, out of all those games, that was the most gritty of those games. There were prisoners that you could talk to and, like, leave alone, or you could just, like, shoot them in the face for, like, no reason at all. There was no consequence, I think.
I'll maybe have to go back and play this, because, like I said, I never played that one myself, except for brief moments of it. The funny thing
with Blackthorn was you had an ability to hide in the background by pressing up on your Super Nintendo controller, and you would dodge all the bullets. It was just strange, because no matter where he was, he could just step in the background and nobody could hurt him. But sometimes the enemies would keep moving forward and just kind of stay right by where you went into the background.
And you couldn't come back out.
So if you came back out, they would, like, you know, like, hurt you pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was just really strange that, like, he could literally just hide in the background and nobody could get to him. Like, I always thought that was funny, but that was a cool setting.
Well, that's cool. So back to the beginning portions of the Super Nintendo. I didn't even realize this, but did you guys realize that Mario Kart came out in 92? Like, that's how early on in the cycle of the system that came out?
Yeah, it was in junior high. Yeah, crazy. I remember playing that. What's funny with that game was that later on in life, when, you know, just talking with other people about it, I forgot that was only a two-player game.
Yeah, only two players. Yep.
It felt like it was a four-player game for whatever reason. It just felt like, because I would have a lot of friends playing,
mm-hmm.
and it just felt like everybody had their turn, but it was only two players.
Yeah, that's one of those games where I got really good with the battle mode that nobody...
With the balloons?
None of my friends wanted to play me because I knew the levels so well, and I knew, like, the one character I always wanted to play...
And you just looked at the other guy's screen, huh?
No, I wasn't that guy.
Yeah, you looked at that screen.
Why you gotta go there? I wasn't that guy.
You're lying if you didn't look at other people's screens.
Okay.
You're a liar.
All right.
No, what John would do is cover every part of the screen except his own.
I would.
The other guy would just be driving in circles.
Exactly. That's the easiest way to win. He can't see.
And that way John's not looking at, so no cheating.
Oh, yeah, totally. So, yeah, no, I remember playing that game and getting really good at it, and... I was a Toad Man myself. That was the guy I liked to drive with. Who was your favorite, Dan?
Toad. No, Koopa.
Koopa? Yeah,
The turtle, I believe people thought he was the fastest, at least in my group.
That's what I thought. Yeah. So I always took him.
Yeah, it was kind of like known that he was the fastest.
No, because Toad and I remember they discussed this in the Nintendo Power. Toad and Koopa, the turtle shell guy, were exactly the same. So they had everybody was the same. The four groups of characters.
Oh yeah.
Koopa was might have been a little faster above Toad, but Toad still had better handling. Then you had. I'm giving you facts here, Dan.
It's faster.
True facts. So it was Yoshi and the princess who were the fastest. They were the fastest accelerator.
Nobody played those guys.
No, I didn't play them. Then you had
Yoshi.
The highest top speed was Donkey Kong and Bowser.
Yeah, the big boys.
Yeah, that's true. Because
they were super slow. It's the slow acceleration.
Yeah.
High speed.
And then Mario and Luigi, of course, were the middle of the road guys. But I liked the guys with the cornering, so that's why in every Mario Kart game since then, I've always picked the guys who have usually the best cornering. Because I like taking those turns as close to the edge as I can.
That one level with the beach and the water in between.
Yep.
And the water would kick up behind your little cart.
Yeah, yeah.
That was cool.
And then Rainbow Road, the first time any of us got to it.
Oh, Rainbow Road was just a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, the Mario Kart, that was one of the first games I got aside from Mario World. And that was another one that just kept me playing that system for as long as I could. And they're still renting games here and there, but nothing was actually sticking at that point. You know, we talked about Super Star Wars.
One of the games early on that blew my mind? ActRaiser.
See, I didn't...
ActRaiser, yeah.
You guys might have gotten into that. We've discussed this with Dan. Just wasn't my type of game at the time. I couldn't get into it, but...
See, what got me into it more than anything... I liked role-playing games, I liked the sort of strategy, populist world-building of it. That isn't what got me into it. What got me into it was one picture from Nintendo Power of the Desert Leader. It was a gold pharaoh's mask.
Oh yeah, I remember that picture.
That was those graphics for it.
Yeah.
It had really good music, I know that. Like,
oh.
That was something I was definitely...
Have you played that recently, ActRaiser, or like in the last 5 years?
I beat it about a year and a half ago.
The platforming side-scrolling thing doesn't hold up very well.
It's clunky.
No, yeah. Remember, I got it on the Virtual Console, and we played through a bunch of it.
It's clunky.
And it was not as tight as people remember.
The world-building stuff, that's still
fine. I think, though, like when it was being reviewed back in the day, people still thought it was clunky. But yeah, the reason why that game got so many good accolades was because it combined those two elements of the city building stuff and the whole the city building and then the platforming 2D stuff. A game that I had that I was completely in love with was a Konami game called Axelay, and that was a space shoot 'em up, a shump. Mm-hmm. And that game had two modes. It was a side-scrolling shoot 'em up, a space shoot 'em up, and it would also be the levels will alternate, and it would also be a mode 7 behind the back of your ship, kind of zooming forward level, and the graphics on that game were pretty phenomenal. I mean, Konami was just kind of like hitting its stride and just making these great, just world beater type games. Like the graphics on Axelay those graphics were so good that it actually slowed down the Super Nintendo so much. It was kind of like that Gradius problem where it just slowed down like so much. And...
Well, yeah, like Super Star Wars when I would play when we would play through that, and I would get like the missile weapon. And I would be there would be like a bunch of those guys in the Tatooine level the first time, the little hopper guys along with the dragons that were floating down, and then you would have like the sandworm that would pop out of the ground. You had all of that on the screen at the same time, and you were shooting a million missiles. And then the SNES would just go, "Why would you do this to me?"
Yeah, let's slow down a bit.
Plus, it had all the music going on too, so it was just, it was like we're trying, we're really trying.
Yeah, and this is. You know, Konami is like wheelhouse. You had Axelay, Teenage Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time.
I mean,
if you looked at it side by side with the arcade, obviously the arcade's much better, but that was a game that just, it really felt like you were playing in the arcade, and the graphics were just as good as the arcade. That was a game also that I thought it was a four-player game. It was only a two-player game on the Super Nintendo. Konami also had Zombies Ate My Neighbors. That was a fun game.
That's a fantastic
game.
I rented that game at least three times from Blockbuster.
That's a hard game.
Oh, God. Yeah, you could get to maybe...
I don't know if those actually...
Weren't there like 100 levels in that game or something like that? I remember it being a ridiculous amount. And the fact of the matter is that I would get up maybe to about 40 or 50. It was similar to our recent Gauntlet foray into Gauntlet 2, where we got up to level 101.
Just kind of quit. Zombies Ate My Neighbors played on that whole, like... They don't make these type of movies anymore. The 80s and early 90s movie motif where, like, the kids kind of, like...
Kids versus the evil aliens.
Yeah, you know, like, Monster
Zombies,
Squad, Goonies, those kind of games. And it played on that kind of motif of, like, these are some kids. And it felt really cool because you were, like, you know, in 6th grade or 7th grade. And it felt like it was just up your alley.
Well, it was kind of funny because the main weapon in that game
was
a water gun.
Water gun, yeah.
But you could also get, like, explosives. Uh-huh. And, like, I forget if there... Wasn't there, like a weed whacker, too? I think that was a weapon. And it was just... It's, like, violent, like, horribly brutal weapons. And one of the characters was a kid wearing 3D glasses with a blonde, spiked hair. And I'm just like, wow, these kids are going to be scarred for life if they ever survive this. And then there were aliens in there, too, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there was, like, a giant baby. Wasn't that one? Yes!
Yes, giant baby. It had one of the all-time great names for a video game.
It was really good.
Neighbors. That's a good one. Yeah, and that was made by Konami. Konami also made two of my favorite Super Nintendo games that I would put in my top 10. They made Cybernator and also Metal Warriors.
I still haven't played. We still need to find a copy of that.
Cybernator was there's like a Japanese name for that series, like Assault Suit Vikuden or something like that. There was sequels up until like the Sega Saturn times, but Cybernator was really awesome. It was a side-scrolling robot game. It had this whole story around it, kind of like a Robotech kind of thing. You had the bad guys, kind of separatists, attacking all around the world. There was like other characters in it. The translation was really bad from Japanese. You had like other people in your group that would like they would like die and everybody get sad and stuff like that. It was crazy. The Japanese version had the prime minister of whatever country you were fighting for like commit suicide at the end. They took that out in the U.S. version. I remember this in EGM. They like pointed it out, and the U.S. version he just ran away. But those graphics were crazy because they just had huge explosions. There was one level where you actually like fell to the earth through like the atmosphere because they couldn't come and save you, so you just had to fight your way down to earth.
Now this is Metal Warriors.
No, this is Cybernator.
Really?
Metal Warriors was like a step ahead.
Oh,
there was different kinds of robots. There was a robot called Prometheus who had a big cannon and just like other special things. There was like a ball robot. There was even a flying one. There was like dashing ones. Metal Warrior always gets confused as a sequel to Cybernator, but it wasn't. It was kind of like in the same kind of
spiritual successor.
I think that was even developed by LucasArts or something kind of co-developed and published by Konami.
Interesting.
And Metal Warrior had a dynamic where you could actually get out of your robot.
So similar to Blaster Master.
Yeah, you'd be this little tiny guy, and sometimes you'd have to do it during missions because you'd have to jump out and try to find another robot because your robot was just jacked. There was no on-screen health. Your robot just slowly deteriorated and started smoking. So you had to get out, but you were extremely vulnerable at that point. And it had a great two-player mode, a two-player versus mode. You picked your robots. There were other robots in the level, and you fought each other.
So you, getting back to Zombies Ate My Neighbors, so you the two-player mode. LucasArts developed that game, yeah. Zombies Ate My Neighbors, and Konami published it. That would never happen today.
Well, LucasArts was making great...
Oh, yeah, they were making fantastic games. A lot of
different games, too. LucasArts wasn't only just making that,
weren't
you know...
Weren't they Maniac Mansion?
Yeah, they were Maniac yep. Mansion. They were Full Throttle...
Monkey Island games. Both the Monkey Island games.
You know, the
Full Throttle, Day of the Tentacle.
Day of the Tentacle.
The Dig, if I remember
Dig,
correctly.
Yeah.
The good ones for PC, like TIE Fighter...
Oh, I was about to.
We'll get to it. Yeah, and then they also made what's the other adventure game? Dig, Full Throttle,
Monkey Island,
Grim Fandango,
which I never actually
played. The Indiana Jones game.
Oh, I never played those either.
Fate of Atlantis. Yeah. That was an awesome game.
Yeah, LucasArts used to be good.
Yeah, LucasArts used to be really good.
And then
good.
They made the prequels, and then everything died.
Same thing with Konami. Like, they were really good publishers, developers of these games that were very, like...
That are burned into our brain.
Well, burned in our brain, but also very different and yep. unique and just kind of, experimental almost.
Well, they would go with new IPs, you know? Nowadays, we don't see that very as often as we'd like. You know, just them trying to establish a story and telling... just one story. Like, hey, here's this game. You're going to play through it beginning to end. We hope you really like it. And we're not going to try and make this into a franchise. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't happen as much as we'd like anymore. I mean, we had that back then, and now we just...
Well, they still do it. It's just on a small...
It's more
really,
the indie market as
the indie market
to the,
is really doing that now.
The big publishers.
It's not so much the big publishers.
Yeah.
And see, I have a special place in my heart for Konami, because they showed me one of those important lessons. Same friends of mine who had the Super Nintendo before it came out, they picked up this game. We didn't know what it's called. Really weird game. It's a Japanese game. And I learned because of them, or because of Konami, with this crazy game that I became addicted to, you didn't need an adapter to put a Japanese Super Famicom.
Oh, yeah, you just had to break off...
push it hard.
Well, you got to break off those two little plastic tablets if you had...
That
like
would
a
pop
butt,
up
if
when
you... had a butter,
yeah.
If you had a butter knife, you could just do it.
And then you got to push it in a little hard, hold down the... Like, when you slide the power, because otherwise it just won't quite...
Well,
because
that
in.
Power thing locked it on the Super Nintendo cart. They had the little slot in the front
yeah.
of them that would lock it into place, so... So
what game?
What game?
You don't remember?
Legend of Mystical Ninja.
That was a fantastic game.
That was awesome game. Had great like isometric town stuff, and then you'd go with these weird ninja magics, and you'd have like weird gyms training you on them.
What was the name of the main character? Goemon or something?
Like
Goemon. Goemon.
Then there's the dude with the big nose.
Yeah, just the good character design.
And then the
fantastic.
Actual levels were so good of side-scrolling. Like, the visuals were amazing.
That was a hard game, right? That was like kind of like River City Ransom, where if you didn't like do it well in the beginning, it just kind of, you'd never caught up and it was
and
just bad.
Because of that, is easy up through the third level. And then all of a sudden it's impossible because screwed up.
It's one of those kind of...
Yeah, I know the name of the game, never played that one myself.
So fun.
But that sounds really cool.
And in Japan, they made like 5 or 6 of them. US, we just got one.
So moving forward, I remember getting the video for this from Nintendo Power and looking at this game and going, oh my god, that's amazing. I must have this game. The video I got from Nintendo Power, surprisingly enough, was made for a company that I ended up working for. The first job I had several years ago in a call center.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the company that made that video, I ended up working for one day.
The Donkey Kong Country video?
Yeah, they made the Donkey Kong Country video.
That video also converted me.
It was like 10 minutes long, and it was just like, oh man, we got this game coming out. We're totally reinventing Donkey
Silicon
Kong.
Silicon Graphics.
Yeah, I mean, it was so crazy.
On Silicon Graphics workstations.
Yeah, and so... I got that game. It was either my birthday or Christmas the year it came out, and I was blown away by that game. I loved everything about that. And of course, the funny thing was that I didn't like Donkey Kong in that game. I didn't like playing as Donkey Kong.
Oh, just playing
at all.
Everybody liked Diddy Kong.
Played as Diddy Kong cuz he was such a
He was faster.
He was faster. He had that little cartwheel that was really great. His cartwheel was awesome. And I loved his monkey voice, too. He had the little higher-pitched monkey voice that was great.
Yeah, like Donkey Kong, he just... But Diddy, he was...
Diddy had the hat and the shirt. I mean, Donkey Kong was cool because he had the tie. but...
Well, one of the all-time, you know, historical redemptive stories. Donkey Kong used to be
a bad guy,
super villain, and now he's a good guy.
Yeah. Well, hey,
has he ever been a bad guy since then?
I don't think so. Right? I don't think so.
Of course, he's never... remember back in those days, Mario was a bad guy for a bit.
Yes.
Donkey Kong Jr.
Oh yeah.
Mario was a
DK's
jerk.
Kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so I had
what
that
a
one.
Weird plot.
I had the first Donkey Kong Country. And it was, the bad guy was like King K. Rool, so there were these giant lizards that you had to fight. But the level designs are really good, because they had standard side-scrolling levels where you would go, you know, you would go left to right, and then they would have the underwater levels, very similar to Mario-style stuff.
Wasn't there like a minecart thing?
There was a minecart
level
that I really liked. Those were really hard, because you had to have really good timing on your jumps when you were in the minecart.
You can't slow down, can't take your time
to
think it through.
Exactly. And there were these like jumps, like a blind jump, where you'd hit like a small piece of track and there'd be a crashed minecart there that you'd have to jump over. I remember fondly just playing through that and trying to discover all the secrets that were in that game.
Oh, that game had so much.
Because it had all the like the random secret doors, like, and there wasn't a real clear indicator about where they were. So you had to, like, have a TNT barrel sometimes from way back in the beginning of the level to get this secret area. And then it had the animals that you could ride. You had the rhino, you had the frog, you had the ostrich, and is there one more? The swordfish. He was in the underwater levels. But yeah, I just remember being very satisfied with that game. And it was two-player, too, so you could play co-op.
Yeah, and with
you
all
play
the
co-op
secret...
at the same time, I don't remember.
No, you couldn't because you would have to swap off. But you could play two player, similar to the original Mario games, where
okay,
which was great. I mean, those games were always good. So then you could both be Mario and DK. So it was Mario and Diddy or Donkey Kong and Diddy.
I'm Donkey Kong World.
Yes, sure. So it's all Donkey Kong, and you had Cranky Kong and Candy Kong, and then I got the sequel. I got Donkey Kong Country 2. Which dropped Donkey Kong altogether, and I was very happy with. Or no, was Donkey Kong still in Donkey Kong?
I don't remember.
It just got confusing. I couldn't get in the sequel.
Oh, I still enjoyed the sequel quite a bit, and I still played as Diddy.
The thing is, the original, loved it, obsessed over it. I can't pick it up anymore.
Yeah.
It's
a little rough on the eyes now.
Yeah.
It's a little pixelated, but I will say this, the gameplay still holds up. Like,
sure.
The actual platforming portion of it is very tight still. You have very good control over your jumps.
But it's not like Super Mario World, where the graphics, at least,
are not
sore on the eyes.
Yeah, it was a graphical showcase, whereas Mario World was more of a stylistic choice. So
yeah.
They weren't pushing...
It's just the classic kind of...
Exactly.
Kevin started talking about a Japanese game and, like, ripping out the tabs on your Super Nintendo, and that jogged my memory. I had three Japanese games that I bought in the Philippines. Dragon Ball Z 1, Dragon Ball Z 2, Dragon Ball Z 3. These games are awesome!
I've only played these on emulator, but these are the fighting games, right?
Yeah,
the
these
Street
are fighting
Fighter-esque.
Games. These are great. Before Dragon Ball got popular here in the States, before they had the Dragon Ball Z cartoon... on Saturday mornings.
Yep.
I heard about this. I watched a couple videos with some friends who were really into anime, like back in like 91, 92, and were watching Dragon Ball Z tapes with no subtitles or translations.
So you're basically just watching bright images moving
around
a lot.
Yeah, yeah, these guys shouting at each other and just fighting. Didn't really know the name of the characters. Not really sure what was going on, but in Dragon Ball, you kind of didn't really know what was going on, and even if you knew what was going on, you kind of didn't know what was going on anyway.
And the writers didn't know what was
going on. Yeah, there's no real point to Dragon Ball. Those Super Nintendo games were pretty cool, because there was a story mode that I would play, and I had no idea what was going on. There would just be these characters, they would talk... Cell, Super Cell, all those guys.
So you
just
see these
up.
Images of guys not knowing who the hell
they
are.
Yeah, they'd just be talking.
And then there'd be just, like, Japanese characters on the screen,
yeah,
and
yeah.
you're like, okay, I guess,
yeah.
when do
be,
I fight?
If I remember...
Green guy hates spiky-haired guy.
Yeah, there would be choices. I didn't know what I was doing. And then, like, just kind of not sure what was going on, but the versus mode in that was great. because you had so many characters. You had like a up and a down, like you could like.
I zoom, do remember that. I remember
you could
that.
Zoom up into the sky. You could do like your special moves.
Yeah.
You could kick guys like all like just all over the place, and you just you had these big like fighting arenas.
Now,
that you fight
in. In the first game, did they have the Super Saiyans, as it were? Were they in the very first
yeah,
game?
Yeah.
Okay, so they were. So you had to. I remember there was, if I remember correctly, playing it on, like, emulator, there was some weird sequence of buttons you had to hit to, like, go into the Super Saiyan mode with the guys who could.
I don't think in the first one they had that. I think they were just separate characters that you'd pick. There was
oh,
Goku
what?
And Super, yeah, Super
oh,
Saiyan
oh, that's
Goku.
Disappointing.
Yeah, but... they had good sprites on that, good graphics. The controls were that really hard, unless you were, like, really into fighting games. It was hard to get those controls, especially some of the supers. It was kind of it kind of reminded me of like those Neo Geo like fighting games, like Art of Fighting and stuff, where to do the special moves just felt like it was just so hard, and you just would have to practice so hard.
Well, yeah, it'd be like forward, back, half circle, forward. Half
no,
circle.
The worst would always be down and away, down towards.
Oh
down
yeah,
down and away, and then like five different buttons, and you're just like, there's no way you can even do that.
No.
I hate this. But yeah, I had those Dragon Ball Z games, and
nice.
I brought it back to the States, and I was pretty popular for a bit.
I'll bet you were. That's pretty awesome.
And then Dragon Ball became popular here, and it became like this huge. It became this huge thing. So we just play like Dragon Ball Z games, and it was yeah. You just had to break off the tabs, and you could play all of those Japanese games. I didn't get too many Japanese games for the Super Nintendo, just because. You know, just the Japanese text was just really hard to get over.
Yeah, and you could only get certain types of games without actually knowing how to speak Japanese.
Yeah,
really.
I had,
Super Nintendo started bringing a lot more story, a lot
yeah,
more writing.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty tough.
So so during this time, you know, when we're going through all of the classics on the Super Nintendo. This is when I first started to get into the PC games.
Yeah, PC
and
games start creeping in.
We briefly mentioned this earlier, but I had a friend in high school whose dad and him were kind of like you, Dan, really into computers and like knew their stuff, and they knew their PC stuff at this time. So
well, I didn't know any PC stuff.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying. I know your brother was really into computers, so
yeah, yeah.
He was knowledgeable. So my friend and his dad were really knowledgeable about computers. And so this is where I started to get some of the PC games that, you know, this is back before a lot of copy protection and things like that. So you could have copies of games, like if you owned a copy of X-Wing or TIE Fighter, you could copy it onto like 8 floppy disks and give it to your friend.
Oh yeah, those IBM PC games that I was talking about in, I don't know, a couple episodes ago, like all those Police Quest games, we never bought those in the store. We had a copy from some friend.
One friend or maybe... crazy uncle or something
yeah.
like that, he bought it, and next thing you know, the world owns it.
And I remember getting a joystick for X-Wing and TIE Fighter, playing those games the first time, and X-Wing not so much. Like, I got into X-Wing a bit.
TIE
Fighter's
the better
bit,
game.
But
TIE
Fighter, oh
TIE
man,
the
that just that blew
X-Wing,
my mind.
X-Wing had too many of the escort missions.
X-Wing was
I
the first
those.
Game, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so TIE Fighter was the more refined.
Yep.
It was just the better game.
And plus, I mean... When I first thought about the game, I'm like, TIE Fighter, the TIE Fighters are terrible. They blow up in like one hit.
They don't have any shields.
They don't have any shields. But then they started introducing all those crazy TIE Fighters.
Advanced,
the TIE Advance. The TIE Defender.
Yeah.
You're just like, wait a minute, these TIE Fighters are awesome.
Yeah, they looked cool too.
And the funny thing was in the X-Wing games, it's called X-Wing. I never flew the X-Wing. It was all about the A-Wing. I wanted speed, and I wanted missiles. That was all.
A-Wing was the bane of TIE Fighter.
And if
so
you hated
hard to hit them.
If you hated yourself, you played the Y-Wing, because that thing was slow.
Yeah, it was just... Was X-Wing versus TIE Fighter, like, after...
Yeah, it was after
yeah,
both.
So that was
it
the third.
It kind of sucked.
Really?
It was...
Yeah.
I've heard...
Okay.
It was decent, but it was a different kind of game. It wasn't, like, a story-driven game
yeah,
like the first two games
were. It's almost
were.
More... It should have been a LAN party game, except for it's before, you know... People weren't quite connected yet.
And here's another funny thing about TIE Fighter, if you think about it, is those two games had like a rudimentary, if you think about it, achievement system. because your character got, like, medals for doing missions.
Yeah.
And then in TIE Fighter, you had that, like, that Emperor's Secret guy who gave you the crazy tattoo on your arm.
That would keep growing
the more missions you did, like, the special missions for the Emperor. I just remember that being so satisfied of getting, like, a gold medal on something and being like, yes, I did so good on this campaign. And then you would get to the next campaign and you'd barely scrape by and get nothing out of it. And you'd be like, now I have to play this mission again to do it well enough to get the medal.
Now, did Wing Commander come out before X-Wing?
The first Wing Commander.
The original,
Wing Commander. I didn't actually play the first one. The first Wing Commander
you
game.
You played the one with Mark Hamill?
Yes, Wing Commander, Wing Commander 3. This was in high school. My computer couldn't run it at the time because it wasn't good enough. But I had a friend who could run it on his computer. Yeah, my friend could run Wing Commander 3 on his computer, and we would go over there after school in high school and start playing through that game. And oh man, that just blew my mind seeing the cutscenes, the FMV stuff.
Oh yeah,
seeing Biff from Back to the Future as like Maniac.
I had Wing Commander, the first one on that Macintosh Performa, and man, those are good games because. If I remember, you had to navigate back to, like, the base.
You had to go to nav points, and then the nav points would take you to the next place.
For whatever reason, it always made me, like, really, like, imagine, like, I was traveling through space. It felt like it was hard.
The only one of those I got, I remember, I didn't get Wing Commander 3 or 4. I got Privateer, which was a similar style of game where you had a ship that you could build up and, like, upgrade and things like that. But it was that similar style where you had to go to nav points and you could, like, find derelict ships and things like that.
Am I remembering this correctly? In Wing Commander, when you died, they had, like, that funeral sequence.
Yes.
And they, like, shot you out into space.
Yep.
Yep.
That always made me depressed.
Well, they did that, remember when they did the FMV version of that in Wing Commander 3? Because you got to choose, like, one of your love interest possibilities, I believe, would die no matter what. Like, there was no way to save them both. But... And a porn star was in that too.
Which porn star?
Ginger Lynn, I think her name was. She was the mechanic in Wing Commander 3. Yes!
Nice.
That game had everyone.
Acting chops.
I know. Hey, a gig's a gig, right? Sure, we'll be on a green. This is the best acting she's ever done.
Yeah, on a very memorable game.
Yep. And Malcolm McDowell's in that game.
Yeah.
John Rhys Davies is in that game.
Really?
Yes!
The guy from Ben the like Beckham? John Rhys
Davies? No, that's...
Oh, John Rhys Davies, Sliders.
Yes,
never mind.
Yes,
why am I thinking... Never
Gimli
mind.
From
Lord
of the
Rings.
Well, Sliders are more important
Sala.
Than Gimli.
I'm going to shut up for like...
No, that's all good. Oh, man. That's just... Yeah, this is when
PC
I really
games.
Started getting into PC games.
See, the greatest for me, first time I saw TIE Fighter was at a friend's house, and he's... One of those friends who had everything. Like, he had a 3DO back when those were $700. So, his PC, he had, I forget if it's Gravis Phoenix pad or the Firebird pad, but this thing, bigger than any keyboard. Just this humongous controller. You had, like, a slide-out throttle controller. You had a main pilot stick that had, like...
Five hats.
Yeah, five hats, like 10 triggers on it.
So this is like a HODAS, a hands-on throttle and stick sort of setup?
Yeah. And then some. There was a pull-out throttle thing, as well as there's a throttle stick. So, like,
the game... Do you have pedals?
No pedals.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's sad.
I don't know
if
they made pedals back then.
My joystick
did,
had a little throttle sting on the side, and two buttons on the joystick itself, and it had textured... Like, these big nubbins on it. It was, like, red and gray. And it was, like... I want to say it was, like, $10 or $15. It was the most basic joystick you could get. But I felt like a TIE Fighter or an X-Wing pilot whenever I'd use that thing.
I had the Gravis gamepad. All you had was a D-stick and four buttons on the face.
I had a regular flight stick with just two buttons, and it just suckered. Suction cupped onto the thing. Me and my brother played FA-18 Hornet. That was one of those flight sim games, but
oh, I'm familiar with it.
You're like in the Iraqi desert and just shooting dudes.
That was way too complex for me.
I had F-117A, which was same vein, same... What was it? MicroProse made it?
MicroProse made all of those games, man. They made
yeah,
so many of those. Like, I think they made, like, Falcon...
F-19 also, like...
Mm-hmm.
those games were fun, but
and then
man,
I,
they were hard.
And then I remember also during that during my high school years, aside from playing the SNES and then the PC, I remember the first time I ever saw Stonekeep. That was one of those first like first person dungeon crawlers that I ever saw that I actually played through.
I can't
Stonekeep was a first person game. It was a dungeon crawler, but it was on PC.
Okay.
It had an FMV opening where you're this like prince character and the city that you're from actually sunk into the ground. And you were coming back to try and bring the city back into the light. And so you descend down into Stonekeep, and it had no map.
Yeah.
And there were a ton of secrets, and it was a first-person game, so you were walking around in the first-person view. And I remember getting that on like 8 discs and installing that on my machine.
Oh, 8 discs.
And there was, I think my friend had the strategy guide for it, which I borrowed from him after he was done.
I've never even heard of this.
It's on Good Old Games. If you're ever looking to try something out, because I know you like the Legend of Grimrock, which was a recent game that pays homage to it. Go back and get Stonekeep and take a look at that, because that was one of those games that I actually forced myself to play through. It had huge levels. The levels were like really complex and reminded me of when we would play second edition D&D in college.
Mm-hmm.
Those big, huge maps that we would have to draw and remember where everything was on the graph paper and everything. It was really, really, really good.
I think this is really like the first like golden era of PC games. Like really, like they were, you know, more complex than a Super Nintendo or Genesis game. And you didn't get all those, like, janky, like, you know, first-generation 3D graphics yet. Like,
no.
You know, you didn't get, like, you weren't into Quake and Unreal where, you know, you can't even play those games
now.
You had
to get a video card?
Yeah, you had to get a whole video card that cost more than your computer. But, you know, you can't even play those games now. But you can still go back and play, like, something like Stonekeep, XCOM. I actually never played XCOM until college.
I didn't play XCOM.
I didn't even know that existed.
You know what I liked back then? For me, what makes me think of when we'd play Dungeons and Dragons, I played all the Gold Box games.
Well, that's what Stonekeep reminds me of.
Yeah.
Looking back on that now, is seeing those Gold Box games, this was a more accessible version of that.
Yeah, the Gold Box games, a lot of those, like...
Explain what a Gold Box game is.
So, back when D&D and computer were at their glory point, what company was that? SSI?
I think you're
SSI,
right.
SSI, yeah.
Strategic Simulations Incorporated. Or
something like that.
Nice.
They also made the Panzer General games later on. But
yeah, and SSI would make all the Dungeons & Dragons games, and they'd all come in gold boxes. So they were the gold box games.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of strategy. It's like playing Dungeons & Dragons with a group of friends. You need to move your guys in the battles, you know, move them, make sure that you're not, you know, moving more than you could afford to. You had to judge, you know, how close do I have to be? What's the range on my, you know, my bow or my slingshot or whatever you're used in? You have to plan out your magic. You throw a fireball into a crowd of enemies and one of your dudes are there. Well, your dude is toast.
So this was this like an overhead view with like squares on the board that you would actually move your guys around in? Oh, wow, okay. I've never heard, like I said, I've only heard of the games, I've never actually played them. This might be something interesting for me to go back on and try out at some point.
Yeah,
one thing, the last time I tried playing them, about 6 or 7 years ago, they were not speed optimized. So when it's the enemy's turn, you're not going to know where they went. The whole screen's going to teleport them.
Although now they've got this, I think, DOSBox.
Oh, yeah.
DOSBox is the thing that you would get to run something like that now.
Yeah, that helps.
But going back to PC again, during the same period, aside from like Stonekeep and all those RPGs and things like that we were playing, this is when real-time strategy games started to become apparent.
Do
you guys remember the first time you played the original Command & Conquer?
Did you not play Command & Conquer?
I didn't play Command & Conquer.
Oh, man.
My first one... Warcraft.
Oh, see,
well, I did play Warcraft and Warcraft 2.
See, I played Command & Conquer, the original Command & Conquer. Of course, not a copy that we bought, but it was shared between all my friends and I. And playing that the first time, that also had FMV cutscenes with the Brotherhood of Nod and the GDI. and it had a narrative story, and it was a modern RTS, so you were using, you know, guys with guns and planes, and I want to say there was a nuclear missile at the end. So yeah, I played that one, and then that segued into Red Alert, which was the sequel to that, which came out while we were still in high school as well. I can't believe this game came, that game came out that long ago. It still boggles me
like
that 20
years ago.
Yeah, that's so long ago. But that was the first game. Red Alert was the one I played online with my modem with friends, where I would dial into his modem. Whoa. And we would play against the computer together. It would be the two of us against the PC, the CPU, and I couldn't even believe it at the time. I'm like, I'm playing a game with my best friend that I called on a phone, and we're both doing stuff at the same time.
The first time I ever did something like that was, I want to say Duke Nukem 3D.
Yeah,
I played
here.
That on like, what did they call it? Modem? Was it modem to modem?
Direct
or
dial.
Direct dial. I played a deathmatch with some dude. Like, I don't even
remember.
Oh,
just a random guy?
I think there was, like, a website that you could actually look up and see where people were, like, playing or something like that.
Back in the gestation period of the internet when
very,
it was just
very,
becoming
very
a thing.
Early. Duke Nukem 3D, that was a pretty cool game because it felt like you shouldn't be playing it. It was kind of that Leisure Suit Larry kind of thing.
Yeah, it was the strippers.
Yeah,
you know,
the strippers.
Throw money at
the random, like porn theater in that first level.
Using the bathroom.
Yep.
Just like Duke Nukem, like just being a nasty cuss. Mm-hmm. I mean.
And then you shrink down enemies and stomp them out. And
yeah, I like doing that.
I didn't get far enough in the game. I think I only had the demo, so I could only play that first level, which is the one with giving the girls, the strippers, the money.
Yeah.
And
then you could shoot them for whatever reason. Those had good weapons in that game. There was they had the shrink gun.
I wasn't a fan
of their minigun because it was like that three-barrel thing.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Anyway, the
Doom one was much better.
The Doom one was the chain gun in Doom was,
and the double barrel shotgun in Doom too.
We're bouncing around, but like Doom's weapons were good weapons.
They were great weapons.
That double barrel shotgun when you got it in Doom 2, because it wasn't in Doom 1.
Nope.
When you got that was just
when you went from single barrel into like this is kind of nice.
Yeah.
Double.
Yeah, that was just like a world destroyer.
Yep.
You would just get Kako demons.
But you would
just,
go
like,
through
goodbye.
So much. You would go through so much.
Oh yeah,
because
you had to shoot two shotgun shells. But yeah, it was just like, hey, Kako demon, how's it going?
And this is your face.
Yeah, this is your face. The BFG.
Fond memories, man.
The BFG was cool.
And, like, we're only at, like, 96 to 98 now.
Some other PC games I wanted to mention. I remember playing Alone in the Dark the first time around.
Yep.
You know, like, I was kind of deriding, like, janky, like, first-generation 3D polygon
That was definitely
janky 3D.
Surprisingly enough, the polygons were big and terrible-looking.
Yeah, they didn't have textures.
It ran smooth.
Well, they didn't have textures on them, so it kind of, you can kind of play it now, even though it's kind of, like, really dated.
Now, be honest, the first time you played that first level with the dude,
I freaked the shit.
How many times did you die with, like, before you figured out what to push over where before the monsters broke into the room?
I don't remember,
because you had to push,
like, a lot.
The bookcase in front of the window, you had to push the chest over the thing in the floor. And those were the two that you had to do immediately, otherwise you would be weaponless and just fighting the guy with your fists. And he did it like Jack Johnson style.
Yeah.
And you could kick him too. You could kick him too, and it just looked so bad.
That was one of the first games that was legitimately just scary. Like Doom was scary, but it was more of a kind of adrenaline like rush scary. But that
Alone
game
in the Dark scared me.
Alone in the Dark was scary, like, and it was, if you look at it now, if you look at videos now, it looks so cheesy.
Yeah, it does. Those
but
monsters
like, yeah,
look terrible.
That door would just swing open in just like this really like awkward way, and then the you know, whatever monster would just kind of like stumble out, and just like, what? This is scary.
What is
but
this?
It was,
and then
it
would eat you.
It was terrifying.
It was. It was indeed terrifying.
Yeah, you had that like opening cinematic where you're driving the car in, and then that
walking
like,
all the way through the house.
No. Remember, your car would be coming up the driveway, I think, and then there would be like somebody looking through the window.
Oh yeah,
there was like that hand next to the.
Yeah,
that creeped the hell out of me. That was creepy. Yeah, PC games, man.
This is when it started. Oh.
Descent?
I could not.
The first, like, first-person 3 access.
Yeah, that game would make me sick.
That was so hard to control.
That game would make me sick.
I didn't have the... This is before I started learning how to use mouse and keyboard for FPSs.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have those skills. So
that's
I would
why
have
it was hard.
Yeah, it was hard. I couldn't play.
I played that on a gamepad, I think.
Yeah, I think I was trying to play it with my joystick, and it just... having to do the yaw and, like, turn your ship around to make sure you're facing, like, is that the ceiling or is that the floor? I'm not quite sure.
Yeah,
so,
and you couldn't tell which way
go.
Are you pulling
yeah,
at.
you would get, like, really, like, just messed up just with your directions.
The way the 3D space was in that game was really...
The reason why I wanted to play that so much was just reading about that, like, in a magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, really? There's, like, games like this?
Yeah.
Like, you can just go in any direction? It's just, oh. Oh, wow. That was really cool.
So, where was I going to go with this?
I don't know.
I was trying to talk... there was a PC game I was wanting to mention that I'm trying
sure.
to... I'm losing... Oh! So, also being unable to play first-person shooters when I was also in high school. This is when I didn't play the original Dark Forces.
That was a good game!
I didn't play the original, but when we finally got dial-up and we got a fast modem, the demo for Jedi Knight, which was Dark Forces 2,
mm-hmm.
came out, and it was a 50 megabyte download to play the first level of the game.
Yeah.
And of course, back then, you were downloading for a few...
It was like 4 hours, 4 to 5 hours to download that 50 megabyte file.
I had, I only played Dark Forces 1 at school. Like, this was in high school. Like, our physics teacher is pretty cool. He just let us install video games on, like, the Apple computers in the back room.
Nice.
And since we were, like, honor students and just, like, all around, like, good students and stuff, he just let us just hang out there after school. So, like, from, like, about 2 o'clock to 5, we were just browsing on the school's fast web. Using Netscape...
Navigator.
Or Communicator.
Or Communicator, yes.
Yeah. And then making stupid web pages on like the very like
GeoCities.
On GeoCities and all that stuff, but on like the back alleys of our like high school server.
Oh,
like,
man.
I don't know if they're still there, like but they were there for a while.
That's
it might not be there anymore. But like and then playing Dark Forces. Like, we would play Dark Forces at school. That was the only place I played.
Well, remember, this was back when they started to have mouse support for looking around.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't do it. Like, my brain would not connect at that point yet. So I was using a gamepad, a Sidewinder gamepad, to play that game, to play that demo, and trying to aim with that thing.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was just beyond frustrating.
That hurts.
Even the demo didn't have the lightsaber. So all you had was, like, the first 3 guns.
Yeah, because you didn't get that later.
You only got the lightsaber later. And when I finally got that and realized that there were force powers in that game... And it had another one of those with FMV cutscenes in between each of the levels back in the glory days.
If we're going to talk about FPS and computer games, since I was the Apple kid,
mm-hmm.
I mentioned Marathon. Marathon was good, and you should play Marathon. Marathon 1 and 2, they're both good.
Do they still hold up?
They still hold up.
They do.
Yeah, you had aiming, you had complex levels, you had a lot of guns. Unless you count Pathways into Darkness, that was the first FPS that you could actually have akimbo guns. You could have 2 guns.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, you could get 2 shotguns, I believe. And then you had, like, a shield, you had oxygen, you had... There was a lot of multiplayer modes. There was, like, King of the Mountain modes. Like, I think there was a Capture the Flag mode. And there was even bots in there. You could throw in, like, a ton of bots and just play, like, a multiplayer game with, like, a ton of like, computer-controlled guys just running around. And they're all, like, talking to you and stuff like that. Like, and Marathon is made by Bungie, who used to only make Apple games and eventually became, like, Halo. And, of course, there's, not to get too much into it, but there's a lot of similarities with the Marathon universe and the Halo universe and
mm-hmm.
stuff like that.
And so those came out while you were in high school, the Marathon games? Or were
Yeah,
okay.
Those are, like, early high school. Bungie was a big developer for the Mac. They also made this game called Abuse, which was a side-scrolling game. You were like a guy, platformer, and you would control your movement with the keyboard, but the mouse would be the aiming, so he'd be free-looking aiming like all over the place, and you would just run, and that was a like, you know, really speed kind of like twitchy game.
Okay.
They also made this other game called Myth. Myth was like, if you want to think like Total War series, but on a very, very smaller scale, but fantasy.
Okay.
Like, and it had 3D graphics and like a lot of blood and gore. Like, guys would just fight each other and stuff like that. And that was a game that you would play online also. Myth and Myth 2. Those were really cool games. But
see, so back to FPS.
That's the Apple part. Okay, bye.
Back to FPSs. If you want some really cool ones, you know, there's games like
Hexen.
Rise of the Triad.
Heretic.
Heretic.
Rise. Wait, oh. Is Hexen and Heretic the same game?
Yeah. No, sequels.
I know.
Oh, you're trying to fool
us
here.
One of them got crappier as it sequelized.
Yep. But no, but Rise of the Triad. Rise of the Triad. This is back when shareware was still a thing, guys.
Yeah.
You could get the first like episode of the game for free, mm-hmm. and they just tease you with it. But you were
Duke Nukem.
Yeah. So Rise of the Triad, I remember specifically for the Hand of God being the craziest weapon in a game that I had ever seen at that point. BFG was cool, but the Hand of God was amazing.
Because
your character would get taller, so the your camera angle would slightly change, and you just have that hand, and all you would do is shoot out that ball, and the ball would seek out every enemy and kill them.
Just obliterate everything.
And they would melt like the zombie, or like the Nazis in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
And, of course, the other thing it had, it wasn't just... Rise of the Triad was Rise of the Jump Pad.
Yep.
Every level was just jump pad.
Had lots of jump pads. And I remember the guns in that being fairly solid, too. But it didn't matter, because you wanted...
Who made Rise of the Triad?
I'm trying to remember who made that. You must look this up.
I'll look it up. You guys keep talking about it.
And then, like...
And Final Fantasy III was 94. That's so early. I can't even... I always thought that was later in my high school years, but it was, like, right when I started high school that came out.
Yeah, let's go back to the Super Nintendo.
Any other SNES games that you can really remember?
Earthworm Jim? Earthworm Jim was awesome.
Played it. Never big on it.
That was a funny game, and cool animations, good level design, and he had an awesome little gun.
Apogee.
There we go.
That's who
I wanted to. I wanted to say it was Apogee, but I wasn't sure.
The bad cover.
That
for
cover
him.
Art was awesome. I don't care what you say. That looks rad.
It so didn't portray what the game
was.
Did
they ever make a sequel to Rise of the Triad?
I think they're working on one.
They are.
Is
they're working on a new Rise of the Triad.
Is that a Kickstarter project?
It might
be. Are they just
been.
Making a new Rise of the Triad?
Who knows? If Apogee's making a new Rise of the Triad, if it has the Hand of God,
what
I'm
else,
sold.
What else did they make?
The publisher is going to be Apogee for the new one.
Yep.
However, it's Interceptor Entertainment.
What other games have they made?
Apogee. They made... there was a space shooter that they made, aside from Rise of the Triad. I can't remember the name of it now. I'm trying to remember the name. They did the Commander Keen games, I thought, as well.
No, that's not it.
I know it did that, but I thought Apogee published those.
Oh, I don't know. But,
Let's see. They had, a lot of Duke Nukem games.
See? Then it was the Duke Nukem games. I knew they did a
shooter. Oh, they made Duke Nukem?
Yeah, they published the Duke Nukem games.
I never made that connection.
Yep.
Super Nintendo. There's, I liked, Lost Vikings, made by, Interplay and Blizzard. Lost Vikings was cool. You had, three different Vikings and, you know, one guy had the shield, he could block stuff, he could be a thing that somebody could stand on, he could also float with the shield, there was a guy who could jump, the only guy who could jump, and then there was a guy with a sword and bow and arrow. That was pretty awesome.
So he was the weapon guy?
Yeah. What other Super Nintendo games? I really liked Earthworm Jim, sorry. I liked Earthworm Jim.
I was a huge RPG fanatic, mm-hmm. and there are... So, I heard...
We could just go down the list and talk about all the RPGs that came out of the SNES.
You know, a lot of them are the obvious ones. I mean,
yeah, Chrono Trigger, Secret of Mana,
Final Fantasy 2 and 3.
So, there were some crazy ones. There's a Nintendo, like I said earlier.
You're going to say Paladin's Quest.
Paladin's Quest. The game that was all pastel colors, and instead magic
with
points,
these weird cotton
you had
candy
hit points.
Cotton candy trees.
Paladin's Quest, for those of you listening at home.
Yeah, so Paladin's Quest.
Paladin. Paladin. Fine, whatever.
Paladin.
Aladdin's Quest. So, there were also some other really crazy ones, like...
Okay, go ahead.
Terranigma.
Yeah,
never heard
it
of that.
It was sort of a... Oh, you played inside the planet. You were inside of a world instead of on the surface. It was a empty sphere that you walked along the inside surface. So crazy camera view using a lot of Mode 7 for it. And you were going around trying to restore the world. And then once you restored it, you come to the surface... Where you are now restoring the animals of the world.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so looking at this now, I see we're looking at screenshots of Paladin's Quest, and I see why you liked it now, Kevin, because it was
ridiculous.
It's basically Dragon Warrior,
not just Dragon Warrior, but very Phantasy Star esque as well.
Very Phantasy Star.
Yeah.
So that's how I can see why you'd be appreciative of that.
Phantasy Star, if you wanted to burn your retinas.
Sure, why not? But
what about
I had Secret of Evermore. I didn't even have Secret.
That was
of
the American the American Japanese style RPG
where you had a rocket launcher.
Did you have
a
dog?
You had
a
dog.
One with the dog,
and
yeah.
The dog changed according what world you were in.
Now was that actually a good RPG?
It's okay. It was
middle
it,
of the
it
road.
Very it very con- it controlled just like Secret of Mana, so it had that same style of like
except
action
no three
RPG,
player.
Except no three player, and. I remember enjoying what I played of it, but it didn't grab me the same way that Final Fantasy III did, or
well,
Final Fantasy II.
I want to say, didn't it have, like, you had to keep collecting parts or something?
There was something you had to collect.
That part got annoying, but, you know, for one playthrough, it's good. I'd never go back to it. Another one, Soul Blazer.
Soul Blazer.
Which... To me, it feels like Soul Blazer is the game that later on became Dark Cloud.
Really?
The whole, you'd go in the dungeons,
yeah.
you'd kill a monster lair,
yeah.
You hit a thing, people get restored to the world. And as
yeah,
you restore the world,
yeah, right.
I mean, just like Dark Cloud, except you don't need eat, drink,
Dark
your
Cloud.
Weapons don't break.
Dark Cloud was a good series, that's a little bit later. Was
and
Dark
then,
Cloud the U.S. Name for it, or...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And then there's Illusion of Gaia, which
Illusion
was...
Illusion of Gaia, okay.
It came off from Dark Cloud. Mm-hmm. Or not
well,
Dark
son
Cloud.
Of a bitch, reading, if what I'm reading is correct, the reason that we never got a sequel to Secret of Mana was because Secret of Evermore was released.
Yeah.
Oh.
That makes me sad.
But you had the dog.
Yeah, you had a dog.
And it had a call out to Cecil from Final Fantasy
mm-hmm.
II.
And it was developed in North America. It was developed in America.
Yeah,
of course,
American-made
Squaresoft games were great. I mean, you had Final Fantasy Mystic Quest.
No.
Moving right along. I know I played these. I never owned them, but I did play them and enjoy them. Was the Breath of Fire 1 and 2.
Breath of Fire, yeah.
Breath of Fire 2 I remember being better than 1, so I really enjoyed Breath of Fire 2, what I played of it.
2 was awesome because they did not release hardly enough copies in the U.S. So after I had that game... Bought it for $65.
Mm-hmm.
About 6 months later, I beat it, sold it to one of my friends used for $140. Because it's that rare of a game.
Now, I totally lost my bad. I'm out of here.
Oh, okay. Here's,
here's
another
RPG
yeah,
that
RPG.
We can get into. Super Mario RPG.
Oh.
Well, yeah. I mean, this obvious. It's good.
Squaresoft developed
really
game that
yeah.
just I rented when, that the first time, and
it was before the divorce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
The divorce.
I could
between
still
Nintendo
remember.
And Square.
Remember in school, in high school, because 96.
Yeah.
I remember one of my friends saying, "Hey, did you hear Nintendo is making a game with Squaresoft?" And for us, that was Nirvana.
Same here. Yeah, because
that
I had played
paradise.
Final Fantasy III, and I was like, "Wait a minute." Guys who made Final Fantasy are making a game with Nintendo
mm-hmm.
based on Mario characters. And then you got the Nintendo Power that revealed the game, and my mind was blown. This is going
it
to be
like,
the greatest.
How do you make a turn-based RPG with Super Mario? And they did it. Really good.
They did it beautifully.
And the game, it fair, you
that's
know,
this, really late in its cycle. This is 96. The PlayStation was out already.
Yeah, in the same way that that Donkey Kong Country has not aged well graphically, the gameplay in this still holds up.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, it's the progenitor of the Mario and Luigi games on the Game Boy Advance. Those are good games.
Yep, the actual turn-based combat, but you still had input on it, so you could block, and you could do extra attacks based on your
and
timing.
And, you know, it was also the forerunner of Final Fantasy VIII with the gunblade, and you had to hit the button at the right time to do extra... Okay, moving on.
Oh, here's another real good one, though. Seventh Saga.
I played Seventh Saga.
Ridiculous game. In previous podcasts, Dan, I heard you talking about, you know, Phantasy Star is weird. It's medieval, but you have robots.
Yeah.
And, dude, you had an elf, an alien, a demon, a robot, a priest.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you had all of these characters picked from. And the crazy thing, whoever you pick on their quest get the seven runes, which will save the world or something.
Sure.
Story was convoluted.
I remember playing it. I could not tell you what the story was of that game.
You'll find, like, as you play, your one character, you have a party of two.
Yep.
So you might find somebody. And during the gameplay, if they join you, you're lucky. Because if they don't want to join you, they will attack you.
I remember that. I do remember that, having my party of two guys and meeting, like, this one guy, one of the characters. I want to say it was... Who was the guy in the blue armor? Was that your character, or was there one of the characters who had this, like, crazy blue armor?
That was the fighter, if you chose to be...
Okay. So I remember getting into a battle and just getting my clock cleaned by the character I was trying to, like, talk to. He's like, no, I must kill you. And I'm like, wait, why? And game over. Okay.
And then, like, sometimes of the seven runes you have find, one of them would be, like...
Okay.
One of the runes would be in the possession of another player character. You'd have to kill them. Unless they happen really like you. Then they join you and you'd get it. And then, like, you'd even have, if you were the demon and you talked the priest into joining you, the priest could, out of the blue, a couple hours later, say, you know what? I'm done with you.
I do remember that, too. Yeah, no, the...
And by then, you'd never get another character to join you because they all hate you now.
Such a weird game that just... Enix or was that Square?
Enix.
That was Enix.
Enix made the crazy one.
They made the ones you're just like... This doesn't play like...
They made the ones that
are Final...
really Japanese.
This doesn't play like Final Fantasy. I don't want to play this anymore.
I mean, they made Evo, the game where you're a fish that eats stuff and you evolve with your experience points. And you could somehow become a human at the end of the game, and it was the worst creature to be because humans don't have horns.
Nice.
I think another underrated RPG series on the Super Nintendo, and I don't know if there's any, like... If it just stopped after the Super Nintendo with the Lufia games. Lufia games are good. Those are solid RPGs. There was nothing... It wasn't, like, world-ending, like, Final Fantasy III. There was no, like, opera scene that would just, like, blow your mind. But those are good, solid, like, workman-like RPGs. They were just
fun.
There
was some good emotion in it.
Yeah, yeah.
There is emotional writing. Like, the very beginning of the first game... You're playing effectively the ending of a second game.
Yeah.
And you see your whole party
die. That was cool. I forgot about that.
You beat the big bad guys, but two of your party members die as the, you know, evil tower collapses. They die in there. You go through the first game, then you play a second game where you're playing that. It's a prequel.
Yeah, and you know you're going to...
You know you're going to die.
Oh, man,
I want to
play that now.
And once it happens, it hits you.
Yeah. I want to play that now.
Yeah,
that makes me want to play this
game
now.
So. I still have them. I've got the cartridges.
I mean, when those came out, you know, not too much fanfare, not a lot of people knew about it, but, like, when they reviewed well, and everybody who's played it just have very good memories of that.
And, of course, Lufia
if it was called
one...
Final Fantasy V, like, those games would be on everybody's top 10 list.
And, of course, Lufia 1 was just straightforward RPG.
Mm-hmm.
Lufia 2, though, you had... sort of puzzles in the dungeons, almost like a Zelda game puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, shoot an arrow at a target, lure a monster onto a switch, then paralyze it.
Well, and I think the Final Fantasy III did that, definitely, where you had the three separate parties. areas where you'd have to break up into three separate parties.
And like, you never had enough good, like, characters.
You had, but that was the thing. Your first playthrough, you didn't have enough good characters. But every other time you played through that game, you're like, alright, time to take Gao and Realm and her father off into the...
What is it? Umami?
The snowman. And the guy who did the... You could only get if you knew to get swallowed by the sandworm.
Go-Go.
The mimic, yeah.
And then for me, Cyan, the knight, hated him because you had to wait forever for his good abilities.
So what were you going to say, Dan?
Was there any... outside of the super big RPGs, the well-known ones, is there anything else that's a good... Ogre Tactics, was that on the Super Nintendo? Or was that...
Ogre Battle.
Ogre Battle was, if I remember, was pretty good, but I don't really exactly remember it specifically.
I never played it, so it wasn't an Enix game.
It wasn't bad, but it felt clunky.
That was a turn-based tactical
one. I mean, I had the Genesis, so I had Shining Force.
Yeah,
Shining
if you already
Force
had
2,
Shining Force,
and...
like, there's no point in playing Ogre Battle.
Well, it's kind of funny, because, like, back then, I didn't like those games at all. I couldn't appreciate them. But now, I can't get enough of, like, a turn-based tactical or a turn-based RPG.
Ogre Tactics.
Fire Emblem never came over here.
And that's the thing. One of my favorite games now, RPG-wise, that I can still go through and play and enjoy is the Fire Emblem games.
How many did they make on the Super Nintendo or Famicom, Super Famicom? They made
a ton, didn't they? Yeah,
they probably made a ton, and we never got to see any of that.
Okay, it's a game. It's not that obscure, but everyone forgets it. Earthbound.
I was just about to say that. That was literally what I was just getting to.
I never played that when it came out. I played it later in college.
This is a good place to finish
awesome
our podcast.
Game. That's an awesome.
That game is amazing. That was one I rented from Blockbuster. Played the first night that I had it. And I want to say I stayed up until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning playing that game. And back in this day in the high school, I did not stay up late. I was a, like, 10 o'clock, time to go to bed kind of person. And that game just, I was, like, glued to that screen. Because it was an RPG.
It was weird.
But it was weird. And
it was modern day.
It was,
you had a character named Pooh.
There was a kid, kid protagonist. He was using real cash. It was like dollar bills to buy his stuff.
You would call home
and your mom's like, oh, hey, I'm glad to hear from you. Your dad's deposited like $600 in your bank account that you would only know how much you got based on what monsters you killed. So you would call in and be like, oh, I haven't heard from you in a while. You gained like 3 levels and you've got like $1,500 in your bank account. And I was like, all right, sweet. Gonna go to the ATM. Your kid, Ness, had an ATM card.
What a good game.
God, it's so good.
What a good game.
The ambiance of that first sequence when you're coming out of your house.
The graphic
and there's the
style was so amazing. It's simple but elegant.
Still frustrates me to this day that they're not going to...
There's never been a sequel, right?
They've made sequels, but they've never come out here.
And there's a prequel
in Japan,
Mother Zero.
And it's just... it just makes me so angry that Nintendo does not... realize how much of a fan base
after
they have
Smash
for that
Brothers,
game.
You know, Ness and those people want it.
Yeah, I want a new Earthbound game. I would love to play a game where I'm using a baseball bat against crazy aliens,
and you have psychic powers.
Yeah, so satisfying.
That's a good game.
I mean, you know, it was like high time for Super Nintendo RPGs.
I mean,
you had ones that were B titles that were playing like A titles. You had the ones that were, you know, we're not going to really talk about them because there's really nothing else to be said. Like the super stratospheric, like game changing titles, the Final Fantasy III, Chrono Trigger, Secret of Mana,
and Earthbound, developed by Nintendo, or published by Nintendo, developed by HAL, the guys who went on to make Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
And the fact that they made that game in-house from scratch, whole cloth, where they took their inspiration, of course, from, like, Dragon Warrior and things like that, it's just amazing. So, you want us to take a look at...
fucking Equinox.
Equinox, spiritual successor of Wizardry. Or of
Solstice.
Fuck that game.
Fuck the Equinox.
You want one more bad one to end on? Look up Tecmo Secret of the Stars.
Oh, I know that name.
Fuck... that
Super Nintendo game with not even NES level graphics.
Oh god,
Tecmo just hated us.
So we were gonna end on the high note with Earthbound, but instead we ended talking about garbage games on the SNES.
I'm a masochist. What can I say?
Damn it, Kevin! Ground this to a halt. So, anyways, we'll stop here for today. I think we've gotten up to pretty much through our high school days and the SNES.
The Nintendo, the 90s is just going to be confusing because, I mean, you know, technically going back and forth, we were mentioning games that came out like in 97 and 98. Even.
Yeah.
So we're gonna have PlayStation, N64, go back and Saturn,
Virtual Boy. We didn't even touch Game Boy.
No, we haven't touched Game Boy.
I don't know if we're gonna be able to.
I think next time maybe we'll just start talking about, because I didn't personally own a PlayStation until later, till college. So it would this will be a discussion where you and Kevin, Dan, you and you guys can talk about your introduction to the PlayStation. And I played a PlayStation, but and I'll jump in here and there, but you guys are definitely the authorities on that for the launch and how you felt about that. So we'll get into that next time.
Yeah, we'll save that for next time. So, thank you for listening to another edition of Infinite Lives.
The podcast.
The podcast. And we'll be back for some more.
Thank you for listening.
Bye-bye.